I want to reflect with you a bit about the business of labor. Before I say more about that, I want to clarify that I am not going to be talking much about either A, labor unions, which some people associate as the business of labor, or B, some biblical notion that labor is punishment or servitude, the way that the author of Genesis describes God telling Adam that work shall be a thankless struggle. By the sweat of your brow you shall toil. It's not that kind of business I'm talking about either. Rather, I want to reflect with you about how the business of labor is that when done with dignity, when provided human dignity, ennobles the individual and blesses the family and stabilizes the society. And I want to reflect with you about that because in our day and age, and actually in just about any day and age, clearly in the first century, the idea of labor being something that can be done with dignity was an issue for the church. On Wednesday, our Facebook page included a post asking what readers might be planning for themselves and their families for the Labor Day holiday. Innocuous sort of question, just, you know, not provocative at all. We got two responses. Both of them had to do with barbecues. I'll tell you what I've been thinking about doing, although I'm not saying that this is my plan. I have not cleared it with my family. But, well, anyway, Coco and I have a history of stuff like this. And I'll tell you that our first date was September 7th, 1997, and I brought her sunflowers. And those sunflowers have almost nothing to do with it. Those sunflowers are in celebration of Josh Romice and his life and his love, but they reminded me of the fact that there was a romantic time, and is still, that began on September the 7th, 1997. And it was a couple of weeks later that we had our second date, and I'm going to tell you about that in a little bit, because it has to do with the business of labor. Anyway, for tomorrow, I've been invited to do something. To march in a parade. I didn't even know there was a Labor Day parade. I'll be honest with you, a Labor Day parade in St. Louis. But Missouri Jobs with Justice and the Tri-County Faith Labor Alliance, both of whom I have correspondence with and occasionally show up for a meeting, are taking part in the Labor Day STL parade. And they're inviting all the clergy that are engaged with them to come and join in. 8:30 in the morning, on the Monday of a three-day weekend. I don't know that that's going to happen, but, you know, when Christy posted on the Facebook page, what are you going to do for the Labor Day holiday, and I saw two barbecues being planned, I thought I might say, you know, I'm thinking about going to a parade. You remember this past July 5, we sang songs from the American Patriotic Songbook, like the Battle Hymn of the Republic and America the Beautiful. One of the songs we sang was This Land Was Made for You and Me by Woody Guthrie. I reminded you as we were singing it that Guthrie had lived for much of his life as a hobo and had written the song in reply to Irving Berlin's God Bless America, which he considered to be jingoistic and chauvinistic. In fact, Guthrie's original refrain ended not in "This land was made for you and me," but "God blessed America for me." And much of Woody Guthrie's work was to tell other people in similar financial situations as himself, as well as workers across the U.S., that the United States was as much for them as it was for the owners of the businesses that they worked for. Woody Guthrie was not only a freight hopper, a hobo, he was a socialist, a right-down Christian socialist. As a matter of fact, "This Land Was Made for You and Me," I sang it in school, in grade school, but I know that my dad didn't, and that other children didn't for many, many years because of Woody Guthrie's redness. He was known to believe that the sharing of all things in common was the Christian way and a way that is coming, as he put it. Just as they were shared in common by members of the church in Jerusalem, as reported in Acts of the Apostles, chapter 2. Of course, what he didn't know, and what I think is also important to remember about Acts of the Apostles, chapter 2, was that the early church talked about the co-ownership of all negotiable resources, land, income, wealth, but not collective ownership of the means of production. So you could still own your business. Lydia, who made purple cloth, was never asked to sign over the papers that granted her the business to the church. One presumes that she went ahead with her business, and that business people then are as they are now, allowed the ownership of the means of production. But Guthrie did write many standards of the labor rights movement of his day. Songs like "Union Burying Ground" and "Walking Down the Road Feeling Sad," and even a song called "Jesus Christ," which played on the imagery of a Galilean carpenter who was killed by rich people whom he told to divest themselves of their goods. Just as James says happened at the end of that reading you heard a little while ago. And lest you think that Woody Guthrie was either overstating or misappropriating the conditions of the early Christian movement, or even Jesus himself, consider those words of James, the brother of Jesus, we heard just a moment ago. Such words can strike the ear a bit like that imagery of Jesus, can't they? James railed against wealthy people whom he accused of holding back the pay of their workers in order to enjoy a bit more of themselves. He set a higher standard for Christian business people, even as he was setting a higher standard of expectation of Christian workers. You know, I wear this on Sunday mornings, especially on Sunday mornings when we share communion, because it is exemplary of the clothing of a first century house servant. And the stole that I wear around my neck, although it also tells you the season of the year that we're in and it indicates the authority that I've been vested in by the church, is a towel. The cincture is a symbol of servitude. It doesn't just, you know, give me a nice belted look. James said what he did the same way that his brother had said only a few years before, telling a wealthy young man to sell all his possessions in order to follow him. Jesus told the parable of the rich fool, in which God's own voice is heard saying, "You fool, this very night your life is being demanded of you, and the things you have prepared for yourself, whose will they be now?" And in the curses in Luke, which balance the Beatitudes there, Jesus says, "Woe to you who are rich, for you have received your consolation." And lest you think that I am speaking only to people this morning, or trying to draw your attention this morning only to people above a certain income level, be aware that we in the United States look like rich people to anybody else in the world, almost. easily 3/4 of them. Elsewhere, Jesus, like the author of the letter to the Hebrews, insists that a worker deserves to be paid. And so we have made it our business as the church over the last 2,000 years to figure out how to imbue labor with dignity and how to give business and management conscience that says that we need to uphold and uplift everyone with us. Over sayings like those of Jesus and James, the congregational church lost almost every congregational church in the South to the Presbyterians. Because we talked the way that we did. The ones we didn't lose were either displaced to Oklahoma with the Cherokee when they walked the Trail of Tears, because that's where our primary focus of mission work was in the South at that time. Or else the church went into hiding until it was safe to reemerge, as we see with First Congregational Church of Memphis and in Atlanta and New Orleans. I don't doubt that our original members here at First Congregational Church of Webster Groves, after the Civil War, or waited until after the Civil War to found our own church, in part because they were exercising discretion as the better part of valor. Although I'll tell you now, as a foretaste of a sermon I'll preach in January, that the Rock Hill Presbyterian Church, with which our first members were previously associated, was led by a family which appears to have freed some of their slaves before the Civil War began. So our spiritual forebears may have just been satisfied that the area didn't need a congregational church until Webster Groves was big enough to accommodate churches of its own. Be that as it may, from abolitionism to the movement for a 40-hour work week, to the replacement of child labor with public schools, to unionism and workers' rights for collective bargaining, to unemployment insurance and Social Security, the congregational church stood up and spoke the truth and sought to do something about it. Pastor Tracy Blackman of Christ the King United Church of Christ in Florissant has observed that every Christian has two tasks before us: to speak the truth and to take action consistent with the truth. And the truth, by the way, should remind us of Jesus' saying that I am the way and the truth and the life. Since 1957, the United Church of Christ has raised the same standard, often making people in the pews uncomfortable because the pastors and many lay leaders have cried out for increases in the minimum wage and lately for things like health insurance reform and opposition to right to work. These are not political cries. These are not political cries. They are expressions of love and uplift for all people. They are invitations, not condemnations. Invitations like those which Christ himself extended to his society as he welcomed the outcast and healed the sick and raised the dead and argued for the dignity of all. Invitations to live beyond privilege and in solidarity with everyone. So I told you a little while ago that Coco and I started dating tomorrow back in 1997. She will tell you, as I will now, that our second date was a visit to Forest Home Cemetery in Forest Park, Illinois. And the reason for that was because that's where the Haymarket Martyrs Monument is. And if you want to know about the Haymarket uprising, we can talk about that after church. But for now, suffice to say that in 1887, it began the modern workers' movement, the modern labor movement. And, you know, you've all got sort of bemused looks on your faces now. I want to assure you that woman said she wanted to come with me. She said, "What are you doing this afternoon?" one Sunday, and I said, "I am going to the rededication of the Haymarket Martyrs Monument. Do you want to come?" And she said, "I wouldn't miss it." And she did not roll her eyes when she said that. One of my church families, of the church that I was serving at the time, had members in it who were in the leadership of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local there in Chicago. And they had invited me to come and join them for this celebration, the 110th anniversary of the Haymarket incident and the restoration of the Haymarket Martyrs Monument. We have t-shirts that say that we were there, with the monument on them and everything. Very romantic. Not at all political. Or at least no more political than Jesus and James calling out the rich and inviting them to live the truth that they were telling. And in at least one case being. This is just as romantic as imagining that a supper table ought to be as open to those who cannot afford what's placed on it as those who can. Open to all of those who don't perhaps deserve what's there as it is to those who do. It's not exactly a barbecue, but on a Sunday morning, remembering Christ and his offerings to us and his invitation to us, it'll do. So I invite you to come, to realize the dignity of work and how it can help you to be ennobled, to stand up straight and to live the life that God calls you to. The Pope observed last month, as a matter of fact, in a new encyclical that seemed very UCC, that strong labor laws can make for secure homes and a stable society. And he spoke the truth as he said that. And we are taking action consistent with that truth throughout our history and even today. So, what do you plan to do for Labor Day other than what we're doing right now? Barbecue? Maybe take advantage of the last day at the public pool? End of summer season? That's great. How about a parade? Amen.